I'm Blake Collins.
And unlike Blake, I'm Nick Devadas.
And welcome to The Health Quest.
The Doolander's Health Quest. Yes, this is the series when we talk to experts in health and wellness about their top advice for people over 40.
Let's do it. Hi, Lyle. Welcome back to the Doolanders. How are you?
I am great. I'm happy to be here chatting with you guys again.
We are super happy to have you on. Now, you joined us on episode 48, and we had an amazing opportunity to talk to you about your journey. So for those that haven't had the chance to listen to that episode, in two sentences or less, who are you and what do you do, Lyle?
I am an educator, an author, a speaker. I co-created a primary school that we opened last year. I work with families around trauma and creating harmony. I'm a parent to three kind of adult kiddies and you know, passionate about doing life well, really, or doing life with as much ease as possible.
How do you fit that on a business card?
Yeah, luckily, we don't really have them. It's very hard to pinpoint just a few words. I struggle, yes.
Well, that is perfect, and you are absolutely perfect for Nick and I have changed up the Doolanders a little bit, and we've created a series called The Health Quest. We had our marketing team work on that name. It's amazing and original. But it's all about doing life as best we can for those that are over 40. And today we'd love to, I guess, have a chat to you about relationships. So if you think about, you know, those that are in their 40s and 50s and perhaps younger than that, there's many people out there that are suffering this real epidemic of overwhelm. So if you think about our jobs today, right, in terms of relationships, where we're parents, you know, we're partners, husbands, wives, daughters, sons, we've got friends, we've got all of the relationships and the things that come with work, all of this responsibility and a bunch of conflicting priorities. Can you give us your insight on, one, as adults, how do we manage that epidemic of overwhelm and that feeling of overwhelm in us? And two, how do we help our kids with that feeling of overwhelm?
It's such a good question, and I think it is so reflective of our times. And I think it's actually quite poignant now, having lived through what we've lived through with COVID in the last few years. I mean, for me, I think the first thing is a lot of us live in overwhelm and don't even realize it, because it's become our baseline of just functioning. Like, we're living with amounts of stress or yelling or control or all these kind of things that actually we don't even realize there is another way of actually being. And I think one of the gifts actually of COVID for some people was having to slow down or working from home or, you know, just things shifting in a different way actually, I think, helped people to see, well, what are my priorities in life and where do I want to be and what does this feel like? So I think on some level what happened is it opened up some doors for people to say, actually, is the way I'm doing life really working for me? And I think that's a really good question to actually firstly ask and go, why? Why am I doing this? Yeah, yeah. Are we doing this for a fancy house or a car, or do I think my kids are only going to be successful if I send them to the most expensive school? Or like, what are the drivers behind what we're doing? Because I think so many of us have been conditioned to just stay safe or do what our parents taught us to do, to just live a life that is often about the continuous, you know, running. And yeah, actually, if we were to pause and say, well, what would bring me happiness or what would feel good for me, what would that look like? And I actually think that's what popped up for a lot of people. You know, I know in a lot of the clients or people I've worked with, many have changed careers, they've moved. I moved down to the coast after going through COVID. I was like, I don't want to be in the city anymore. I want to be in nature. And that was a huge thing. Like, I've lived in the city my whole life and I felt like I was moving to a foreign country, even though it was an hour away. And I think the thing is, it's a really beautiful opportunity to actually firstly pause and go, well, what is causing my overwhelm and do I need to be living in this?
Yeah.
Now, I think the other thing that's really important to understand for us as adults is, well, what do I do when I get overwhelmed? So what we often do is we either try and control situations. So we yell and we control and try and micromanage everything. It gives us that false sense of like, you know, I'm doing okay. Or we often go into shutdown, which is where we kind of work to numb ourselves out. And that can sometimes look like drinking a bottle of wine at night. It can be overeating. It can be watching too much Netflix. And again, I think it poses those questions, well, am I actually living the fulfilled life I want to live? And then if you're a parent, you have to be really conscious of, well, what am I also modeling to my children? Yeah. You know, our children learn about the world by watching us. So they're constantly watching what we are doing. And if we're giving these mixed messages of, you know, you should go and take risks and live the life you want to live and be passionate, or are we telling them, you know, stay safe and you must do get good grades and only do this job because that'll be safety and all those kind of things. Like what are the messages we're giving our kids? And therefore, what happens when they reach overwhelm? You know, are they living up to this idea of, well, this only equals success and that's what my parents have told me? So I think there's such a beautiful opportunity when we are in overwhelm to take a moment and go, well, what are the contributing factors to this and are they actually that important? And what do I want it to look like? You know, it's one of my most favorite questions to ask people. What do I want this to look like? And I think part of the problem is a lot of people don't even know what they want it to look like. Yeah. Because we're so conditioned to go, this is how it should be. So I think they're the first places we have to start to go, well, where is the overwhelm coming from? How could it look differently? Does it actually serve me? And what could that be? And I think it's then sometimes making those bold choices and changing, you know, what we have always known. And I think that's the scary thing about being a human. We are so much more comfortable staying in situations that don't serve us than we are stepping into something that's unknown. It's why people stay in relationships that don't work. It's why they stay in for jobs for way too long, because the fear of the unknown is so much greater than, you know, the feeling of stuckness often. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, they're good life questions.
Do you find in what you do, there are many people out there that don't step back from time to time, be it on an annual basis or, you know, every couple of years or monthly or weekly or whatever that, you know, time frame is, that don't look at it and go, you know, what do we actually want our lives to look like or our relationships to look like?
And can I just add to that before you answer it? Good timing, dog. Is there a template that people can use in terms of, you know, an approach or something? Because it's often overwhelming itself to go, I don't want to look at my life. How do I even start?
Well, I think the thing is, you know, what's interesting about humans is that we will stay in our comfort zone quite happily. And it's usually when we have some form of crisis that pushes us out. Mm. And so that could be a health crisis. It could be relationship breakdown. It could be getting fired from our job. It could be we often as humans need a nudge to make a change. And the goal is to not have to be nudged, but to be curious about who you are and are you happy to actually be proactive and make those changes. So I think I often find with the people I work with, they have to go through some form of crisis. You know, some people might have heard of what's called the dark night of the soul, which is where you start questioning, well, who am I? And is this what I want to be? And do I really belong in my family? Or are these people really my friends? Or we start questioning, well, who am I on a deeper soul level? And usually it's because we've had some form of crisis that's pushing us into that. Now, the goal is not to have the crisis. The goal is to be attuned enough to yourself to keep checking in, going, well, does life feel good for me? And where do I want to be? And what am I modeling to my children? Or, you know, what do I want this to look at like? And I think we have to be compassionate with ourselves, because for many people, we grew up with parents who didn't ask those questions. So it's not like it's been modeled to us to go, am I living my greatest life? What would a fully passionate life look like? Or, you know, what would bring me great pleasure and desire in the world? Like that's not usually what most of us got brought up with, right? We kind of just continue the narrative that we've been taught. And then sometimes it changes when we have some form of crisis, or when we actually start to do a little bit more introspective work and go, you know what, am I happy? Like, and does this feel good?
Yeah. It's interesting because you're talking about change, right? You're talking about taking people out of what do they do on a day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month, year-to-year basis. And when you do pursue something that's different or, you know, you put your heart and soul into something that, you know, maybe you're passionate about, often there's struggle and hardship that comes with that. And that's the bit that many people run away from, because they don't want to do that struggle and that hard work to get on the other side. What's your advice to those people?
Well, I think the thing is, we all want guarantees and safety, right? So we all go, I would like to become a rock star, but as long as I know that I'm good and people will come to my concerts and I'll sell lots of records, right?
Yeah.
So I want the guarantee that the risk I'm going to take is going to work, right? And that can be anything. I'm going to start my own business, but I want to know that it's going to be okay. And again, we are the products of beautiful generations before us that have all been about safety, like just do the work, pay your bills and just keep your head down, right? And for some people, that's happiness and that feels great, but for others, it doesn't. And I think the thing we have to look at is, and I believe this is a philosophy, nothing is wasted. Nothing is ever wasted. So even if we do leave our job or we do something and we perceive it that it didn't work, there is always gold and there's always learnings in that. So nothing is ever wasted. And I think that the tricky part is that sometimes what people do is they want to take a risk but just also keep the security, which is fine. If you can find a great way to balance that, good for you. But there is always a point where we actually have to go, you know, well, I'm going to follow what my heart says, and I'm going to trust this, and I'm going to see what plays out, because there will be wisdom in it somewhere, because there's wisdom in everything, and that comes back to our perception on how we view life.
Yeah.
So I think the thing is, it's that, you know, and look, again, when it comes to business or making money, of course we need to do our due diligence. You need to do research. You need to do the foundation work for what you want to do. I wouldn't say to anyone, yeah, just go do that and there's no market for it. Like you have to kind of put the work in to see it and then actually make a decision to say, yeah, you know what, I'm going to follow this and see what magic can come from it. You know, I'm a person who spent my whole life jumping in. So if I have an idea or there's something, I'll just go, all right, I'm going to jump in and see what happens. And I'm not afraid to fail at all, because I think some of the best things I failed at have been the greatest lessons and learnings for me. So I never see it as failure. I just see it as, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
And then there's always gold in it no matter what.
Yeah, okay. I love that. So we've asked ourselves, you know, what matters. We've been brave, we've stepped off the side of the cliff, we're doing something different, we've made a change, we're comfortable with being uncomfortable. But our kids are experiencing what they're experiencing, right? So they've wandered back into school, they've, you know, suffered some sort of, you know, trauma maybe along the way across the last couple of years, or maybe they haven't, but, you know, there's so many young kids out there today that are feeling overwhelmed with everything that they've got to deal with in their lives. How do we help our kids overcome that sense and feeling of overwhelm?
Yeah, that's such a good question. You know, I think what's interesting in working with families over the last few years, there's been some kids who've absolutely thrived, you know, because they're perhaps introverts and liked being at home, and
yeah.
And going back to school does feel a bit brutal, because they're like, hang on, I was much preferred but happy here. Other kids really struggled. I think the thing when it comes to overwhelm for children is, firstly, what are we modelling to them about how we handle hard things? You know, do we model to them healthy ways to express our frustrations or anger? You know, do we model healthy ways to cope with our own overwhelm? You know, are our children just watching us reach for Netflix or a bottle of wine? Or do they see us go, you know what, I'm going to do some yoga that helps my body. I'm going to go do journaling. I'm going to go speak to a friend. I need to go for a walk every night. Like, what are we modeling to them around how we deal with the stresses of life? I think that is the most important piece. The second thing I think is really important when we're looking at kids with overwhelm, and particularly when they're navigating traumas, which I do feel that a lot of kids are navigating these traumas of the last 2 years, is that what helps us navigate trauma is to feel like we have choice and autonomy. So where can we give kids choice and autonomy? So the last 2 years particularly, there was no choice and autonomy for them. They were told, you can't see your friends, you can't go to school, you have to stay home and do this. Now, that is very powerless for a child. Now, as adults, we can understand the bigger picture. You know, we would have experienced lots of different adversities in our life. But for our children, for the first time, for a lot of them, this was great amounts of fear coming at them.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of kids were like, am I going to get sick, or what's going to happen? There was so much fear as our narrative around there, and that makes kids feel really powerless. So one of the ways that we combat powerlessness is to make sure we have choice and autonomy. So that can look like, you know, giving kids more choice around, I don't know, what they eat, what they wear, what they do, like just where we can give them choice, because kids are told what to do all the time, all day. So where do we give them more choice and autonomy? How do we give them more power as well? And that can be doing things like games, you know, a big fan of, depending on the age of your kids, power reversal games, games where there's laughter, games where kids get to be stronger, faster, all that kind of stuff can be super great at helping kids just de-stress the overwhelm in their bodies, but also feel that sense of power and choice and autonomy. And I think the other thing that I find super important, and this is also important for us as adults, is how well we listen to our children. So when they are in overwhelm, or when they're feeling frightened, or when they're feeling worried or anxious, one of the most important things we can do is to listen and really listen to what their worries and their woes are. So many of us move into wanting to fix our kids' problems straight away. We feel so uncomfortable that they're upset, so we just as adults want to move in and fix it and change it, whereas really actually what they need is an adult to go, gosh, this sounds hard, tell me more. And we just listen and then listen some more. And when a child really feels listened to, right, from an adult that is sitting there compassionately holding space for them, then it eases part of their burden. And especially if they cry and we sit there and listen to their tears and they're upset without fixing it, then that it's like it lets the pressure off. Now, that is also the same for us when we are in overwhelm, particularly if we're feeling super stressed. When we go to a friend and we have a chat, and maybe we have a cry, or we share what's on our hearts and our minds, then we often afterwards feel a bit lighter, or we feel like we can figure out ways to cope, or we can see that there's possibilities here. So children are the same. So for me, really, when we're looking at particularly children coming back, you know, this in this last term or two into school and going back to this normal, which I don't think it is normal, because I think we've all just gone, oh yeah, let's just pretend the last 2 years didn't happen. And I'm like, actually, there was a lot that went on. We have to keep creating spaces for children to vent and speak their worries and their fears. And so we hear them with compassion and empathy. We have to help them find their own power, inner power again. And, you know, that can be, again, as I said, choice and autonomy, lots of games, play, all that kind of stuff.
Great, great advice. One of the things that I picked up there will take us through to our next topic about listening to our tears. You can listen to my tears when I think about, you know, raising teenagers. That's a really challenging time, not only for the parent, but a super challenging time for the teenager. In our village, in our circle of friends, we're all about to go through that. Some of us are going through it, and, you know, many of us are about to go through that. What are your top tips for helping us do a great job of raising teenagers?
Yeah, well, I want to say just right off the bat, I have such a sweet spot for teenagers, and I do not believe that raising teens has to be the most hideous part of parenting, which I know so many parents come to me and go, oh my God, when they're teenagers, it's going to be hard. And I'm like, it does not have to be. It actually can be amazing and joyous. And the way that we turn up for our teens matters massively. So the first thing that I would say, my first tip, is understand what is happening for teenagers. So understand what's happening physically, hormonally. Like, we've all heard the bad rap of them being moody or slamming doors and all that kind of stuff. But it's really important to remember, okay, what's actually going on in their bodies that's changing everything? So much hormonal changeover, but not even just that, in their brain. And this is the part that I love to talk to parents about, to understand the growth and development in the teenage brain is huge. So I'm going to give you one of my hot recommendations here. Dr. Daniel Siegel, his book called Brainstorm is one of the best books for parents of teenagers, because it talks about what happens in the teenage brain and the body, and it can really give you a whole other understanding as a parent around, when I'm standing there just really calmly talking to them and they're looking back at me going, why are you yelling at me? And you're like, I'm not. What's happening is their brain is reading completely different cues because their brain's developing in a whole other ways, right? So information is really powerful. When we can begin to understand what's happening in their bodies and their brains, it can take the charge off us a bit around why they're being the way they are. So that's my first tip.
They're not just being the way they are to piss us off.
No, they never are. Like, that's the whole thing with kids. Kids actually want to feel connected to us. No child feels good yelling or hitting or doing anything. They're doing it on some level because they often can't help it or because there's something in the way. So it's not because they want to, and they're not waking up in the morning going, how can I really annoy dad today? Right? They're not. They're too self-centered. So it's really, again, our interpretation. The second tip I would say is about being really compassionate with them around all these changes. So one of the things that I did for years when my kids were going through the teenage years was I had the most hideous picture of me as a teenager on my computer, on my screensaver.
I like it.
Now, when I would look at, I had a perm. I was just so wrong on so many levels, right?
What sort of perm? Like a spiral?
Like a ring kind of perm.
A spiral perm. I love it.
And,
just like yours, Blake.
I would look at that, and when I looked at it, I'd be like, oh, like just full of angst for the teenage me. But what it actually reminded me of is this is a really tricky phase, right? This is so full on. You're trying to figure out who you are and your sexuality and friendships and all this pressure to know what you're meant to do. And it's so big. So we have to be compassionate. So I really recommend putting a picture of yourself as a teenager up on the fridge or on your computer so that you constantly are reminded of, yep, this is a really intense phase. So what my kids need here is a lot of compassion for what they're going through. My third tip would be what I call being the anchor, and you know, I talk a lot about this, is that it's our job to be that really safe place for our kids to come. Now, raising tweens, and particularly tweens and teens, that kind of 12, 13, 14 year old age, it's so similar to raising toddlers, except teens have a much better vocabulary, right? But they do exactly the same things that toddlers do, which is toddlers are like, mine, I'm doing it my way. Like, get out, let me do it. And they come in close for reassurance and then they run off and then they come back again. And teens do the same thing, right? They're like, I want independence. I want to be free. I want to catch the bus on my own. I want a phone. I want all that. And yet then they still kind of come in and they need that reassurance that they're still lovable and that it's still safe.
Yeah.
So they do this beautiful kind of come in, come out. And I think it's really important that we be the anchor, which is that safe place for them to come in and land, even if they're not behaving in ways that feel favourable, but remembering that, hey, they actually are trying here and they need that safe place. So can we keep our arms open? Can we just sit in compassion? And it doesn't mean we don't have boundaries and limits, you know, around stuff, but they need to know that you are the safe place to come and there is a safe place to fall. And that really ties in again to the listening that I was talking about earlier. We have to get really good at listening to our teens, which means when they come and tell you something, or at 10:30 at night when you walk past their room and you say, good night, darling, and they go, Mum, can I talk to you? And then you go in, and even though you're like, I really need to go to sleep, they sit there for the next hour and a half and just, you know, tell you all the things. Sit there and listen and nod more and don't offer advice and just listen and listen and listen. And only afterwards, when they finish talking, you might say, do you want some advice or did you want me to just listen? Mm-hmm. And if they say, I want you to just listen, then you don't offer anything, but you just say, thank you so much for sharing with me. And that's it. If you then have to walk away and go, holy crap, oh my God, they're doing this or doing that, they need to know that they're not going to be judged by you and they need to know that you can hold what they're sharing. Like, that's just the beautiful anchoring that kids will feel. Right? You are a safe place to come because you want to be the parent they call when someone's drunk at a party. And you want to be the parent they call at 2 o'clock in the morning when one of their friends is saying, I'm going to drive and they're drunk, right? And you go, actually, no, I'll ring my dad. He'll come get us, right? You want to be that. So we can only be that if we make it safe enough for them to tell us the hard stuff, right? And usually that involves us just listening and not offering advice until they ask for it, because part of it is them having to learn how to navigate, you know, what life is. My fourth tip would be all about connection, which is that even though they're teens and it's all about their mates and doing their own thing, they still need to play and they still need you. But it's not you know, it's about what I often call micro moments. So, you know, it might be just going into their room and sitting on the bed and going, hey, what music are you listening to? And for 5 minutes, just listening to a song or finding out about an artist, or have you watched anything funny on TikTok? And it's actually just being with them for 5 minutes and not asking anything of them. It's not like, can you pick up the towel off the laundry floor? Or have you put your lunchbox in? Or have you done your homework? Or have you applied for that job? Or whatever. Like, we are constantly going, have you done this? Have you done this? Have you done this? Yeah. But to just have a few moments where you just go and be. And again, you'll watch your kids, their bodies will relax because they're like, oh, nobody's asking anything of me. That's a good thing. And so they need these micro moments of connections, right? They also still need touch and cuddles. And even if they push you away a bit, you know, still going by and trying to kiss them and hug them, they still feel loved even when they reject you, right? Yeah. It's really important. They, you know, you're the one holding up the relationship often in the teenage years because they need to separate from us, which is really important. It's part of their evolution. They need to try and figure out who they are outside of the family unit, which is why they want to go and dye their hair blue and get a nose ring and listen to punk rock or whatever. And usually it's just because I need to figure out what this feels like outside of you guys. And often what will happen is they swing out and then they find their way back. You know, around about 17, 18, 19, they kind of come back into the fold. But our job at that moment is not to try and control that. It's to remember their evolutionarily primed, that didn't come out well, to step out from our little, you know, unit here to figure out who they are. That's part of what they're meant to be doing. So when we try and control that, that's often when we get a lot of pushback. So part of it is building that connection in a relationship so that it's safe enough for them to swing out, but they know when to connect back in with you when things are rough, right? That's the gold of what we want to go for. My next tip is also don't take it personally. So when your kids are, you know, getting mad about something, they're often, particularly in the teenage years, kids are also looking for places to vent. They're looking for safe places to bring all the big feelings that are brewing. And who's a safe place? Well, the family. So, you know, teenagers will often try and pick fights with you around stuff that you actually both agree on. But they are often looking for, I've got some feelings in me, some anger, some rage, and I need to get it out. And so, you know, I'm going to pinpoint you saying that thing about this thing just to annoy me enough to let it rip at you. And so I think that's always, again, really important to remember to not take it personally and to look behind the behavior. So when they're getting really fired up and passionate about something, often it's maybe not even really about that. It's about a whole lot of other stuff that may be brewing inside, but they don't know how to move it. So not taking it personally is a really good thing. And that's why, again, coming back to being that anchor point where we're the safe place for them to come, the more that they know that, the more willing they'll be to often walk in the room and go, I'm really upset. Yeah. I need to have a cry, or I'm really angry, and, you know, and we're able to be there for them. And then my last tip, which is kind of comes full circle back again to what we're talking about with overwhelm, is we have to do our own work as parents. So the beautiful thing about raising teenagers is you get to go through puberty all over again, right? Because all your stuff's going to come up, whether we like it or not. All your feelings around going through puberty, sexuality, friendships, schooling, it gets mirrored right back into your face. And a lot of us, if we think back, and this is why it's really important to have that picture of yourself as a tragic teenager, is to go, God, that was hard. And a lot of us still carry wounds from those teenage years. Mm. And what happens is if we don't lean into those wounds, we often unconsciously project them onto our kids. And our kids don't want them. They're like, I'm not carrying your baggage. So they push back, right? And that's where we have conflict a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So one of the most important things is to keep asking ourselves the question, you know, if you're getting annoyed at your teenager and feelings are coming up, like, what's this bringing up for me? What does this remind me of? Like, let me give you a tiny little example. One time my son was a very, very good soccer player. He was playing elite football, and, you know, we were going and supporting him and all that kind of stuff. And then one year he didn't get picked in the team. Like, he was maybe 15 or 16. Now, I am really not a very competitive person. I'm like, yeah, whatever. But he didn't get picked in the team and someone else, the coach's son, did, right? One of those classic nepotism things, right? Even though, and oh my God, I got so triggered. I am like, this is not okay. And we need to speak to the club. And just, I'm getting fired up. And my son's looking at me like, what is wrong with you? And I couldn't believe how much rage and powerlessness I was feeling. And my son, to his absolute credit, just went, Mum, do you think there's something in this for you? So, because he actually didn't care that much. He was like, oh, it's all right. And I was like, had to sit with myself and go, what is this about? And straight away, I was taken back to being like 13, I was doing calisthenics. I didn't make the first team. I was so gutted. I was so full of shame. I was so angry. I had all this. I got rejected, I wasn't good enough, that I would have held on to when I was a teenager, that I never really got to speak to anyone about. And all of a sudden here it was popping up with my son not getting picked in the football team. And I was like, oh, sorry, mate, I just rejected all my wounds onto you. And I kind of, you know, did a little bit of talking with someone about what that was like for me as a kid, and then, you know, it moved, and then, you know, we all moved on. So you have to be careful and mindful of your own stuff. You know, when your teens are going through things, it's one of the greatest gifts you can give your kids is to keep reflecting, what's this about for me?
Lael, we could talk to you for, I reckon, you know, 1,000 days straight on how to do this really well. Hey, thank you so much for your time. Amazing advice in, you know, just under half an hour. We've learnt a truckload. If people want to learn more, and really dig deep into what we've just spoken about, how do they reach out to you? How do they find you?
Yeah. So you can find me on all the socials. Lael Stone. There's not many people called Lael, so I'm pretty easy to find. Or my website is laelstone.com.au. I've got all my courses and stuff on there. And I have a podcast called The Aware Parenting Podcast. And we talk about all things parenting, every topic. So if you want more, you know, great info about parenting, you can find us there.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Lael. Great to see you.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Lael. See you soon.